Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Kenya. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from USA Today Lions Wire. And this is Lions Wire's official Lions podcast. Eric, draft has come and gone. Some people are still upset, but, you know, slowly getting over it, and that's fine.
Yeah.
We're here to talk about a bunch of interesting moves, really. It's housekeeping for the team as they start signing all the rookies and some other free agents. So we'll first start with the roster news. They signed three rookies, headlined by TJ Hockenson.
Yeah, so all the rookies, if you're drafted, you get a four-year contract. If you're undrafted, you get a three-year contract, and then the team holds a fourth-year option in a restricted free agency form. But for all the drafted players, they all get four-year contracts, and then for the first-round player, you get a fifth-year option as well.
And we'll talk about that in a second.
Yeah, and that's based on the team. A team decision. So Hockenson gets a four-year deal with a fifth-year option, and it's really kind of interesting how the fifth-year options work. So Hockenson got a contract today. Tavai got his contract today.
Amani Oruwariye.
Thank you. Oruwariye signed his contract today. Those are the three guys that are under contract. I'm expecting more.
Yeah, they'll all sign eventually.
Yeah, and we'll get to why I think they're going to sign in the next couple of days here in a minute. But all the rookies are going to get signed, you know, by the end of the week, end of the weekend. We should probably know, who the full 90-man roster is. So let me just get back into the fifth-year option. So the way it works is if you're a top 10 pick, they average the salaries of the top 15 players at your position.
So near franchise tag.
Correct. It's even closer to the transition tag, which is a couple million lower than the franchise tag. But it basically ends up being right at that kind of level, maybe even a tick lower. But for Hockenson, when that fifth year comes, they would basically average the top salaries of the top 15 tight ends, and then they would say, Lions, is this what you want to pay to keep him for a fifth year? And then the Lions make that decision.
Now, hey, do you remember the days where the first-round draft pick would hold out? They'd miss big chunks of camp.
Sure.
Does that even really happen anymore? Oh, Sam Bradford.
Sam Bradford was probably the last one.
Yeah, well, that was the last. Wasn't that the last year of the old contract system? Or was Stafford the last year
Bradford.
Of the old contract
system? Bradford was the last one.
Because they got $70 million for, mm-hmm. 8 years and... What a disaster that would be for them.
You know, it's rare that these guys hold out because...
slotted. They know what they're going to get
paid.
Yeah,
and if they hold out, it's mostly guaranteed money type of thing. Like, how much does the agent want to make sure that his player is guaranteed versus the team wanting... And that's really about it. Most of the time, they're almost fully guaranteed at this point for the big guys, and so... Yeah, those days are gone, which I think is probably a good thing. And the Lions don't have to worry about it with Hockenson in the fold.
All right. We talked about fifth-year options. Taylor Decker had his picked up heading into his fourth year.
Now, Decker was picked outside of the top 10. So he falls into a different set of parameters for the average. Instead of it being the top 15, it's the top 30, right? So that drops. You wouldn't think like going from 15 to 30 drops it that significantly, but it really does. Instead of him costing upwards of like 14 or 15 million, it's going to be closer to 10. But they picked up his option. It is not guaranteed unless he makes the 53-man roster for the 2020 season. If he's on the roster at the 53-man cut downs, then his contract becomes fully guaranteed for the entire season. But up until that point, it's only guaranteed against injury. So if he plays this year and he is injury-free, the Lions could still say, I don't think he's worth that $10 million, and they could trade him or cut him. But if he plays this year and he gets injured and he's not able to play next year, then the money becomes guaranteed because of the injury. So it's not much of a gamble, really. I think, you can't really – we've talked about this all the time. You can't really predict injuries. You can't run your organization you know, to you know, because you're worried about him. You have to just keep things going the way they are, and you have to assume that he's, you know, not going to get injured, and you have to just follow the letter of what the CBA says, and he'll probably, you know, he's still got, what, $3 million this year, and then he gets a nice bump for 2020.
All right, now a little more minor news is the Lions are signing free agents. They picked up nose tackle Darius Kilgo.
So Kilgo comes from Tennessee, and he, when he was in Tennessee, he was signed by them to replace the loss of Sylvester Williams, who left Tennessee to go to Detroit. Prior to his time in Tennessee, he was in New England, which is where he met Coach Patricia. And
there's the connection.
And before he was in...
Tennessee is a connection, too.
Sure. And before he was in New England, he was drafted by the Denver Broncos. And when he was drafted by the Denver Broncos, he was drafted to back up Sylvester Williams. And so you see that this guy fits into these schemes. And Sly was a guy that they went after last year, so it makes sense schematically that this guy fits. But he basically was brought in as a backup to Sly Williams, who couldn't make the, who couldn't last half a season on this roster. So from a talent perspective, it sure seems like he's behind the eight ball.
He's camp fodder.
It seems like it. Yeah,
he's there to compete.
And they got four nose tackles now, four pure nose tackles. You know, you drafted one in P.J. Johnson, you retained John Atkins, and you have, of course, Damon Harrison, who is the ultimate nose tackle. But Kilgo comes in, and it's you're going to get a chance. It's going to be a very unique defense, I think, in that they've the pieces that they've added this offseason really will change some of the things that we saw from last season. They're going to have a lot more flexibility, and they've really beefed up a couple positions, nose tackle being one of them.
Yeah, they have 15 players on the defensive line. That's not including the Jack linebacker out of the 90-man roster. All right, so next up, the sad news, maybe for some, for me, I'll miss the guy, although he wasn't available very much. And it's going to be tough that I'm going to have to pick another player who's not going to be available to play. It's going to be on the injury report every week. Ziggy Ansah signed with the Seattle Seahawks. 1 year, only $5.5 million guaranteed.
Yeah, it's a $9 million contract, $5.5 guaranteed. So, and then he can also make additional money and incentives to get that number up to 13.5. But it was also reported today that his shoulder is still injured. And injured to the point that he is probably not going to play in training camp for them. And it's possible he could even miss the first month of the season. So I know the money seems reasonable, and sure. But if you're
slightly less than what we paid him last year,
well, but if you're Detroit and you offer him this deal, I don't think fans would like it if he was coming back to Detroit.
I'd be all right with. I could see a lot of fans not liking it.
Yeah, and then I've also been told behind the scenes though that his shoulder is a very legitimate concern. And it was a large part why Detroit really made no efforts to bring him back. And I was also told that there was another coaching staff that he visited where the medical team said he's not worth it.
Stay away.
His injury is too significant, and so Seattle doctors obviously feel a little bit different. You hope he's able to find success. You hope he's able to earn all $13.5 million because he does a lot of really nice things for Ghana, and he's very charitable and good person. So we'll hope for the best, but he won't. His time with Detroit is officially done.
Yeah, he will be missed. There's some symmetry. I don't know. That's not symmetry. Maybe back to the Cliff Averill signing.
Sure.
He signed with Seattle as well.
Sure.
Was a very effective pass rusher for several years. Won a Super Bowl.
Yep.
Yeah, but we'll see how many games he plays. I bet he'll be effective in the games he plays. And, you know, the curse is alive, so he could have 11, 12 sacks. All right, another big loss to the Seahawks is flexible two-way player Nick Ballore.
Yeah, he also joins the Seahawks. He's a, you know, he's such a good special teams player that, you know, I think that's really where his value is at this point in his career. He gets back to the West Coast. Remember, he originally got his most of his career in San Francisco. He was also a Jet, right, as well. So he's been around.
Well-traveled.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, you wish another local guy done good, so you hope he also finds success. He's probably got a real good shot to make the team on his special teams. Detroit, having spent the amount of capital in draft picks in free agents on special teams, I think there just wasn't a spot for him. And this is now officially the Nick Bowden fullback era.
Yeah, we're fully ingrained. But wait, slow down. Joe Dahl is still available to play fullback. We'll see how Daryl Bevel wants to use him in the offense.
Isaac Nauta, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. He's in the H-back role.
Yep. So there's options.
All right. Since the draft is over, the 90-man roster has taken shape, and many are beginning to argue, including yourself, about what the 53-man roster looks like. We're not going to see a big seismic shift in the way this team looks leading up to training camp. So that means we're rolling into the offseason with the special important offseason dates. Rattle them off for us.
Yeah, basically the big things I wanted to hit on here was that rookie minicamp starts tomorrow, which is Friday. And it goes Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Now, there's no media access.
Is that traditional?
That it's 3 days?
No, that there's no media access.
Yes, it is traditional, no media access. Because what they have is they have all of their rookies, and they have all their undrafted guys that they've signed, but they also have all their tryout players and everybody. So there's
the walk-ons.
Yes. There's a collective group of people that will be there. And typically, some of the guys that were reported as being signed don't end up making it out of this rookie training camp, and some of the guys that had tryouts end up earning a spot. So there's some potential for some shakeup here at the bottom.
Sure,
of the 90.
It's at the bottom of the roster, though. I mean,
it's bottom of the 90.
Yeah, but so yeah. It's interesting. It's interesting to see who they bring in and hang around. I apologize for that. I'm creating a ruckus here this afternoon.
But after that, the Lions then begin phase three, which is the final phase of the offseason training activities, the OTAs, and that'll last 3 weeks. And so there's a couple weeks of just normal activity like we've seen, where there'll probably be player interviews each week like we've seen. But then there's a mandatory OTA, and it'll probably be like first week of June. And then after that, it's over. That's it for all the OTAs. And then the next time we will see these players is late July in training camp. So,
after the Canadian Football League's already kicked off at that point.
So we've got 3 more weeks of information to gather with the Lions. And then after these 3 weeks, there's going to be a nice lull in the information coming out. And then it just becomes where you can get an opportunity to dig much deeper into where they're at and a whole bunch of other stuff. So that'll lead into training camp. Training camp has some cool twists. There's going to be joint practices again. The rumors are that the Patriots, who they play in week 1, will be coming to Allen Park. That's not official.
Unsurprising.
But what is official is that the Lions will be having joint practices at Houston with the Houston Texans. Also unsurprising because of
Bill O'Brien
and all the connections that they have between the two coaching staffs as well. So, and they play week 2. So what we're probably going to have...
Preseason week 2?
Correct. And so we're probably going to have a very similar situation to what we had last year. Just the weeks will be different. Last year we had Oakland in week 2, Giants in week 3. This time it'll probably be Patriots week 1. Not yet officially, but that's expected. And then at Houston in week 2. And then we'll finish out the preseason after that. So,
if the Patriots are Allen Park, is
fun.
Is Matthew Stafford going to have Tom Brady over for dinner? Is that how it works, or do they go to their separate, Matt Stafford back home, and Tom Brady over to the Townsend or wherever they happen to be staying?
You know, I don't know how that would actually go. I would think they would go their separate ways, considering what's going on.
If they're not friends, of course. But,
But what, considering
NFL quarterback to NFL quarterback, they're in a unique position. There's not that many of them.
But Tom Brady has a unique lifestyle.
No, he's a weirdo. Yeah, no, you put it nicely. But Tom Brady's an odd guy. Greatest quarterback, probably to ever play the game, but yep. A weird guy.
And Stafford has a unique family situation at home with Kelly recovering.
Some difficulties.
And he has three young children, and so... I think I would be more inclined to say Danny Amendola ends up going out there with
Brady. Oh, yeah. Yeah, they'll be yucking it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
That's obvious. All right. I didn't even think about that.
Yep.
All right. We're going to head over to the Rod Woodshed, which is a popular segment of ours. It all has to do with Lions president and Ford family football mouthpiece, Rod Wood. And it led off, he was at a little luncheon in Grand Rapids. He did a little talking.
Yeah, so he had a luncheon with fans, and he took questions from them. It was hosted by Dan Miller. It was on the radio. And so, it was, you know, he just got a handful of questions that he could handle.
Do you know
handle.
Where it was at in Grand Rapids?
I do not.
Okay.
I could look it up.
No, you keep telling me about it. Maybe I'll look it up.
Okay. But one of the questions that was asked was about Stafford regressing. And... Wood acknowledged that there was a lack of success in 2018, but he basically said, look, the team still believes in him. And his quote was, he has a unique arm. He makes throws that nobody else can. And with an offense that we have this year and the ability to keep teams on their back feet, hopefully, He basically said Stafford's not going to be throwing 50 times a game anymore, but he believes that they have a better team around him in order to be successful. So he basically is like backing his quarterback, which we've seen pretty much all offseason. Each of the hierarchy head figure guys have all at different points said Stafford's the guy and you know, we're going to thrive and be successful with him. But that... led into a question that we got from Stephen Misilovsky. Yeah, Misilovsky. I met Stephen, by the way, at the draft. They had the training camp party, or the draft party for all the fans, like season ticket holders and stuff, at Ford at Allen Park. And so when I left the media room and I went in and was talking to Scott Bischoff, another writer at Lions Wire, who was on the radio at WJR, I went and I was talking to him, and I met Steven and his brother, good guys. And so he asked me this question on Twitter, and he said, you know, Eric, you've often talked about the fact that Stafford is a top 16 quarterback, and he's in the upper half of the league. And so he was curious who those other top 15 guys that were. And so Joe and I sent Joe a message and I said, let's take the 32 quarterbacks, let's pick our top 16 and see where they rank against each other to see how you view the top guys versus how I view the top guys. And we'll try not to spend too much time debating the list, but we kind of tiered them off. And we'll compare the list here, and we'll see what we come up with. So these are when I say top 15, these are the guys that I'm talking about. And when Joe says top 15, you know, these are the guys that he's talking about. So I can start off with my list.
Hey, you better start out. Mine's not loading.
we might be able to pull it up on here too if you want. So here's how I worked. I said there's three quarterbacks that are there's three quarterbacks in my mind that are the top amongst the whole league, right? These are the guys that I think are the elite of the elite. They're the guys who are going to win games despite the team around them. And for me, those three are Tom Brady, Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers. And that's how I rank them in order. Those are my three in order.
Sadly, I rank mine exactly the same. Now, at the end of 2018, I didn't feel the same way. It's tough. Tom Brady's number one,
yeah,
and because he keeps winning Super Bowls, although his skills are slowly declining, and you can
and he's 41,
yeah,
right?
Sure, yeah.
So I mean, that's expected.
Yeah. But yeah, those are the three.
So I don't think there's a lot of debate there. After that,
you can put them in a different order if you want, but
yeah, sure. But for us, we like those both the same. Yeah. For me, my number four, and it's a clear number four for me, is Russell Wilson.
Oh, see, I have a number four who's clear to me. It's Patrick Mahomes. But we'll see without the weapons this year.
Okay. The reason I have Russell higher is because I think he can win in different ways. And I think he's proven that he can win without a sterling cast around him.
Fair.
I don't think we've seen that from Mahomes yet. I think he's still in his infancy as a quarterback.
1 year.
Right. And so I am leaning towards Russell being higher on my board.
All right, who's your number five?
Well, it's Patrick Mahomes, right? But this is now my third tier, okay? And so I got the top three, then Russell is a standalone, and now I'm in Mahomes. And with me, I have two guys in this tier, and it's Mahomes and Phillip Rivers. Now, I could take both those guys, and you can maybe drop them down. I would not move them up into Russell Wilson's category. But Mahomes and Rivers, I think, are guys that Mahomes is a guy who has all this potential, which is why you had him high, right? But I think Rivers has done it for so long at such a high level. In my opinion, Rivers might be the most underrated quarterback in the league.
Yeah, but he's also getting older. You know, he's 37, 38, sure. And
yep.
He has some very sad and very lonely playoff losses on his docket for his career.
In four years, four of those guys are going to be gone. You know what I mean? Four of the six guys that I've named already are going to be gone. Most likely.
Okay. I have Andrew Luck fifth because he does a lot with less, although he has some injuries over the years.
That's what knocked him down my list.
But when he is healthy, you know, like if the Patriots, if the Patriots were given the opportunity to swap out Tom Brady for Andrew Luck right now, would they do it?
No, probably.
I'm guessing with the capital they've built up, they might go against it, but there might still be 10 years of Andrew Luck left, you know.
No, I agree with that.
All right. But that's my top five, and they were their own tier. And then I roll into the Russell Wilson and Phil Rivers, the 6 and 7, and they're in the second tier.
Okay, Luck's in my fourth tier. Him and Matt Ryan are my fourth tier. And I was really hesitant to put Matt Ryan there. But I think, again, he's got some longevity that I like. Again, I don't think these are guys that I would move up, but I wouldn't disagree with moving them back a tier either. So those are Matt Ryan and Luck are my next two.
All right, so my next three that still fit in that that Russell Wilson, Phil Rivers tiers, Ben Roethlisberger, Matt Ryan. Ben Roethlisberger more for what he's done, Matt Ryan for where he is about at right now, and Jared Goff for what he might do.
Sure. Okay.
Because he made it to a Super Bowl and he does well with a good supporting cast. We haven't seen him with a bad one yet.
So
then it's all downhill from there.
Well, and for me, after 8 is when things get muddied for me.
Mm-hmm.
My 9 through 15 are my next tier. And this is where I think these are the guys that they have the potential to be higher. But they still have a lot of things that they need to prove. And I think that's why I can't quite knock them up into that top 8. Maybe you could even argue maybe even knock them up into the top 6. But the potential's there with all of these guys. Roethlisberger that you just mentioned, he's in this tier for me.
So and again, one off. I have him at 8, you have him at 9.
Yeah, and it's really just because of, again, he's shown the leadership to take his team to 2 Super Bowls, and he's efficient. He's proven efficient. I don't think he's going to have a lot of longevity in my mind.
And yeah, but so, he plays for a good team. I mean,
sure.
I can't. I mean, at the same time, I wasn't ranking these guys over what they're going to do over the next 10 years. I was really looking just at 2019.
So then, after 9 for me is Matthew Stafford, and that's where I drop
him.
Oh,
you got him at 10.
Yep. Now I have him ahead of Goff. And then I have
him.
Which
is fine.
And again, it's Goff is just.
Goff only played in 1 Super Bowl.
Well, he had 1 really bad year and 1 really good year. And Matthew Stafford has had a lot more than just that.
Of both very good and very bad years.
Yes. So, I mean, there's a longevity thing that shows me he can do it more over time. With Goff, I could see him fall back into year 1 just, you know, if things break down around him. So I'm not sold that Goff is ready to take that next step. He has the potential to. After Goff, Baker Mayfield. I think Mayfield is really primed to do well, and the weapons they've added him are going to be up there. And then it's more young guys for me. Then it's Deshaun Watson, then Carson Wentz, and then Cam Newton would be my 15th. And that's kind of where my next tier ends.
All right, so yeah, we're in the same ballpark. I have Carson Wentz 11th, mostly because of availability. Cam Newton 12, Deshaun Watson 13, and then Matthew Stafford comes in at number 14. Got Baker Mayfield a few spots after that, but he could be on the... I had him higher coming out of last year, but there's too much being put on the Browns this year. Like, sure. When they really focus on a team, they're going to be great this year. They usually regress a little bit. We'll see.
I agree.
What happens.
I agree. We've talked about
that. He could be great. He could be the NFL MVP this year. Who knows?
Sure. I mean, he's got
the same time.
Yeah. But yeah. I mean...
You have him at 10. I have him at 14.
So it's not terribly far apart. And but realistically, it's in the same tier. Yeah. You know, they're not... He has the potential to jump up. And as... You know, as his contract moves along and guys like Brady and Breeze and Rivers retire, he's going to move up into those higher tiers. And now the guys below him are going to have that same chance as well. But for me...
It's a lot of guys below him that can make big moves.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I don't think this offense is going to help the Stafford haters. I think this offense will... It's going to be good for him, but it's also going to limit him. But I think he's a much better quarterback, and I think we forget how good of a quarterback he actually is and how much potential he actually has, because most recently he's coming off a down year. But I think I think that 10 to 14 range is reasonable, and I know we're a Lions podcast, but I still think he's going to fall in the top 15. On most boards. Maybe not Chicago, who we didn't mention their quarterback.
Yeah, we have him quite a ways down. I mean, they have a very good team, and he just has to limit mistakes. But I don't know. He's not a very great quarterback, and we'll see. He's got time to develop. He's a second overall pick. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got guys he's comfortable with, and maybe they open up the offense a little bit more this season. Mm-hmm. So let's get out of the Rod Woodshed. Are you all set, or you got another thing to add?
Nope, I'm good.
All right, we're going to talk about camp battles next. And you have a post-draft roster stack, Scott Warhite. I read his article. He had his own 53-man roster projection. And both of you outlined some roster battles.
Yeah, and we were pretty close on the types of battles that we thought that they were going to have. And our rosters weren't terribly far apart. But they're both we'll link to both of them in our podcast here. And then we'll also have they're also at Lions Wire as well. But I used mine as the kind of the parameter for this here. And so I figured what we do is we just quickly kind of hit on each of the positions. And then there's some questions that we've carried over from previous weeks that will fit in there. And we'll try and get those in as well.
All right. First off, the right guard battle between Kenny Wiggins, Ode Abushi, and maybe Tyrell Crosby.
Right. For me, Wiggins is the leader because he's the incumbent. There's a lot of beat writers that really think Abushi is the guy. But for me, Abushi was a street free agent when Arizona signed him. And if he was that good, he would have never been on the street. And so to think that he's going to step into that right guard spot just because he's played in a bevel system before, I think is premature. So I think Wiggins is the guy. If they move Crosby inside, I think Crosby wins the battle. But for right now, it's Kenny Wiggins for me. You agree with that?
Well, yeah. This is the scariest of all the roster battles.
100%.
Because they are not good at this position, and they require some inside protection for Matthew Stafford. Mm-hmm. The next one is for the third linebacker role, now that Jelani Tavai is in the fold, him versus Christian Jones. I think, with the one and two linebackers being Devin Kennard and Jared Davis.
Yep, and I think... It'll be Christian Jones who will be the official starter. But as we talked about last week, Tavai is just too good, potentially too good, or what they think he's going to be too good based on the way they talk about him. He's probably going to be too good to keep off of the field. And Christian Jones will be the guy who probably loses the most snaps. And so Jones will probably be the technical starter. Tavai is still going to get his, though. I think this is kind of a push on who wins this one.
All right, next outside cornerback number two, assuming Darius Slay is the number one, which is a safe assumption. Rashawn Melvin versus Amani or Warrior versus Mike Ford versus Marcus Cooper versus the always mentioned T.J. Moore.
And Melvin seems to be the guy who's going to be the starter right now. Odu Warrior could be the guy who ends up winning it. Mike Ford is the guy who finished the season. Cooper tried it out there for a little bit, and Tease was, at this point last year, was thought to be the guy. So I really still think this is a Melvin Oruwariye battle here.
All right. Third safety, Tavon Wilson versus Will Harris versus Andrew Adams.
And we talked about this last week, too. This is a similar situation where Wilson, being the senior guy, will probably be the starter at the beginning of the year, but he could lose to the up-and-coming rookie in Will Harris. It'll be really interesting to see how many safeties they want to keep. If they want to keep five, well, then Andrew Adams is gonna, he could be a guy that really petitions for that fifth spot. But if they keep four, I think Adams is probably not going to make it.
If it's anything like Tracy Walker last year, I would expect Tavon Wilson to be the number three safety, and then they work their Will Harris into the lineup as the season rolls along.
It sure seems like that same scenario to me.
Respected Madman asks, how do you see Will Harris and Quandre Diggs working on the field together?
So the great thing about Diggs and Tracy Walker is that they can both play single high and they can both play in the slot. And so I think...
Wait, Tracy Walker?
Mm-hmm.
The question says Will Harris.
Right.
Okay, so, all right.
So what I... And now Will Harris is a guy all who right, only plays in the slot, right? Yes. So with Diggs and Walker... You have a lot of flexibility with them, but you don't have as much with Wilson or Harris. And so when I think Diggs, I think Diggs will be the single high and then Walker's in the slot, but I think there's some flexibility to move them. But regardless, I think Will Harris is going to be in that strong safety's kind of slot role. He's going to play a Daron Harmon type role, if you're familiar with the New England defense.
All right, Zach Warber asked the question, how do you see the safety position in week one? Who starts? Who's in for three safety sets? You've kind of already covered
this. Diggs, Walker, Wilson will probably be the guys that start.
All right, Antonio asks, left field question, do you think T.J. Tabor will get a look at playing safety? This is not the first time we heard this.
Mm-mm.
Or will they keep giving him a shot at playing corner? Probably. Otherwise, this could be his last camp with us. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, the most success that Tabor had last year, well, even the last 2 years, was as a red zone corner, and especially when he played out of the slot. And so that slot role can be either a safety or a corner. So that's his niche. So technically, I think he'll still be a corner, but you could see him play a kind of hybrid corner safety role when they get into that red zone. That's really where he has to build.
All right. D. Hargis, how do you see them using Will Harris? Don't get using a third round pick on a safety when we have two young safeties in Diggs and Walker. I know they run three safety sets, but a third rounder seems high.
So here's the thing that they want to do. In order for this team to... See, we've talked a lot about the fact that this team was multiple last season and that they run a multiple defense. They really didn't have the personnel to be truly multiple last year. They had a lot of key pieces, but they didn't have everything they need. In order to be multiple, you need to have one more starter, or one more potential starter on this roster than starters available. So on the defensive line, they have four players who can start, only three spots. At the linebacker level, they now have four players who can start and only three spots. And the same thing is now true in the secondary. They've got three corners and three safeties to start, but only five spots. So the key here is that you're adding a safety and a third rounder that helps now solidify the multiplicity at all three levels. Now you have the potential to end up walking away from this draft with a starter that's coming off, a starter capable player who can come off the bench where you don't have to miss a beat. It also guards against injury, and it just really solidifies this defense. He was one of the last pieces that was missing, I think, from this defense, and he adds that stability long term.
Man, I hope you're right.
That's the goal. I think that's the goal with this, right?
All right. Yeah. Right. Next up are the group of the reserve battles. We'll probably be able to blow through these pretty quick.
Sure.
Quarterback two, Tom Savage versus Connor Cook. And do they even keep a third quarterback? Sadly, Savage is going to get the job. Connor Cook's gone. Which actually, maybe it's not sadly. Maybe he'll end up landing somewhere else.
Like the practice squad. I think he's still ineligible.
Yeah, well, I guess that's where he's going to end up. But, you know.
Yeah, I you're probably right there.
All right. Running back three and four and the fullback. So it's Theo Riddick versus Zach Zenner versus Dai Johnson versus Nick Bawden. I would say Zach Zenner's the man out, but we'll see him plenty this season.
That was what I said in my stack, and that is the, I'd say 90% of the replies to my stack were people telling me how I was wrong about that.
Yeah. Well, Zenner's like the 54th man on the roster. I know the 54th man's technically a practice squad guy, but he's the first guy they're going to bring in out of free agency.
Yeah, and as I said in my stack, there's an argument for each one of these guys to make the roster and not make the roster.
All right, Shaky 44. I think cutting Theo Riddick would be a mistake, but asking for a contract adjustment seems like a practical solution. Could they convert some of his salary into incentives?
That's a very interesting idea, converting it into incentives. I like that. I don't know how much he would like that, especially with the way that Bevel's offense operates. I don't know if he would go for it.
All right, Shaky 44's other question. Ty Johnson seems to be very likely to win the kick returner job. That makes me, don't be so sure. That makes me think either Zenner or Riddick is in serious jeopardy. Zenner's special team snaps can be replaced by Bawden, and his power running can be replaced by Anderson. Agree?
I mean, yeah, I think Zenner's vulnerable. I think most of these guys that we're going to be talking about in these reserve battles are all going to have something that makes them vulnerable. I do think they drafted Ty Johnson because he has the ability to win a kick return job. Now, remember, kick returner and punt returner are very different. And Agnew is a great punt returner, but he's not a very good kick returner. And I think that's a spot that they'll be looking for guys. But remember, they brought in Tommy Lee Lewis for this as well. And Danny Amendola has a history of doing returns as well. So it might not be cut and dry, but I think there's some juice to Ty Johnson that they really like that I think he could have an inside track for that.
All right, DC Waz asks an interesting question. Does Ty Johnson on the roster put pressure on Jabal Agnew as a kick returner? If so, does that put Agnew on the roster bubble? Very surprising.
For me, I don't think it does, but I know there's a lot of people that I respect that believe it does, and so it's possible that. Because when you look at the corners that they have, right now Agnew is at best their dime slot corner, which means he's their second nickel. And there's value to that. But if he can't return to his all-pro form from 2 years ago, and he's at best a dime linebacker or a dime corner, he becomes a little bit vulnerable. I still think he's going to make this team.
Wide receiver 4 and 5, Travis Fulgham versus Andy Jones versus Brandon Powell versus Tommy Lee Lewis.
So what you have is you have two outside receivers who are two excellent blockers in the run game versus two slot receivers who are, you know, trying to see if they can back up Amendola. Powell probably has a little bit of an edge as a slot guy, but like I just mentioned, Tommy Lee Lewis has some return ability. Fulgham gets a little edge over Andy Jones because he's the draft pick. But Andy Jones was a good special teams player, and he's one of the best blocking wide receivers, and they want to have a good run blocker. So this is a bit of a toss-up. I'm actually leaning more towards Fulgham and Jones than I am the slot guys.
All right, Les is Roar, which is an excellent name.
Yeah.
Do you think Powell's going to get the opportunity to beat out and or split time with Amendola? With only addressing the slot, a position of need with a stopgap in Amendola, it seems maybe they are higher on Powell. I know I am.
Well, you know, they paid him the most guaranteed money of the undrafted rookies last year because they liked him. Then he made the roster out of camp, and he was on the roster all year, and he didn't play. They like him. I think the signs are there that they like him. Can he take the next step? If he can, yeah, he could definitely push for time, especially if they think he's the future. I'm not ready to sign over a roster spot to him, though, yet, even though he had an excellent finish to the year.
Now, I don't know if you weed these questions out to where, like, I know you pick and choose a little bit, but it seems that this this listenership we have here, they really like Brandon Powell.
Yeah.
Everybody seems to really high on him. Whereas, I know I'm not right or wrong. I don't know anything. But Brandon Powell, I'm more indifferent to him. Like, if he can show something, great. But, like, I don't know. I don't hold him in such high regard as I do for other low-level players for some reason.
I'm with you on that.
Dan Anderson, you think they are done upgrading the wide receiver position?
Yeah, I think they are, but I think they'll still poke around and maybe try and connect on a couple of people. Dontrell Inman was a guy that they brought in free agency. I could see them bringing him back. He'd be a nice four, you know, if you don't think Fulgham is ready to take that number four and you don't think Andy Jones is your number four. He'd be a nice guy, I think, that they could add, but I think they're probably done.
All right, tight end number three. This is very sad for you. Isaac Nauta versus Michael Roberts versus keeping a fourth tight end. You're Michael Roberts. He's almost out the door.
Well, when you sign Jesse James to a multi-year deal and you draft Hockenson at eight, you've now put him in a very difficult situation where he's got one spot, maybe two. If they keep two, he's in good shape. But if they're going to keep two, then it's possible that they're looking for a specialist. Like maybe they're saying, I want a move guy like Logan Thomas or Donald Parham. That's going to be that number four move guy. But, you know, maybe they like Nauta's versatility and they think Michael Roberts is more advanced than Nauta right now. And so they want Roberts as the three and Nauta becomes the four. It's a tough one to really debate between.
All right. Gary Luke asks, if the tight end room has been completely revamped this year, Hawk and James are clearly tight end one and two.
Yep.
But do you see Nauta pushing out Roberts? I think the blown assignment for the game-clinching pick versus Chicago on Thanksgiving Day has severely damaged Roberts' stock.
Yeah. You know, when they drafted Roberts, I think they looked at him as a project that they were hoping could step into a bigger role in year two, and that didn't really happen. Then he was hampered with injuries at different points during last year, which don't help his cause. Nauta is almost a perfect tight end three, the way he's designed and the way he wins. So it's going to be really tough, a really tough battle for that tight end three spot. But you know what? Realistically, that's the way it's I like it. You know, you want these back end battles. I'm not ready to give up on Roberts just yet, but I think Nauta could push him off.
Big Biting Pig asks, Bevel's offense will likely use more tight ends than the previous scheme.
Yep.
The Lions drafted or signed three tight ends in the draft. Tight ends get hurt a lot. Does the combo of all that make it realistic for the Lions to carry four tight ends on the 53-man roster?
Yeah. You know, they used less tight ends in their scheme last year, and they kept four tight ends. So I don't think four tight ends is out of the question at all.
Offensive linemen number 8 and 9, Joe Dahl versus Ben Schowell and Andrew Donald versus Ryan Pope. They can't give up on Joe Dahl yet. They love the guy.
Right. And if they want to keep 10, they could keep Dahl for the final year of his rookie deal. Ben Schowell, I don't think, is a guaranteed for the roster either. But Donnell versus Pope is a real interesting one to me. Pope, they gave him so much money, it's almost a guarantee he makes it. And if he doesn't, Donnell's only hope for the roster, I think, is if Crosby moves inside. If Crosby doesn't move inside, I think Donnell's probably out. And then it just becomes with Dahl and Ben Schall, do they want to keep 9 or 10? That's what I think the end of it's going to be.
Dominic Morales, can athletes like Ben Schall, who have great technique but lack in athleticism, make it in the NFL? Any examples of players like him that did?
They can, especially in the interior when technique
interior becomes, line's probably a good choice.
Yeah, because look, he was a 4-year starter at Wisconsin, like,
which means something.
Yes, it does. The
Wisconsin offensive linemen often make it.
He was I think he was PFF's number one run blocker last year. You know, like, but he is stiff. He does have his athletic limitations, and that will cause him problems, especially if you're asking your guards to move. And they'll need to in a zone scheme. But, yeah, I mean, there's the interior guys can be less athletic and still win if they have good technique. That happens more often than you think.
All right. Nose tackle number two, P.J. Johnson versus John Atkins versus Darius Kilgo.
This is going to be a fun one for me. I love this battle. I think P.J. Johnson's versatility makes him probably the front runner, but Atkins really finished the year off well. Kilgo, I think, is probably on the outside looking in.
All right. DC Waz asks, do you think the P.J. pick has any effect on whether they extend Snacks?
No, I don't think it'll affect the Snacks decision. I think it is mostly, he's just a back-end guy right now.
What do you feel on the Snacks extension?
They're going to wait a year and then see what happens with Ashawn. And if they don't reach a deal with Ashawn, then they'll probably give Snacks some nice guaranteed money. He's such a critical piece. And like we've talked about before, if he doesn't fall off or if he doesn't get injured, then I think he'll be doing extension down the road.
Off the ball linebacker four or five, Jalen Reeves-Maben steadily falling down the roster.
Injuries do that.
Versus Steve Longa versus Miles Killebrew, a guy nearly forgotten about, versus Malik Kearney.
Well, Reeves-Maben is probably your best cover linebacker, so that's going to give him an edge, and he can end up being your if he's your number five. Depending on what you count as the Jack linebacker, I guess, you could do worse than Reeves-Maben. Longa is just a special teams dynamo. All these guys are going to be special teams guys, right? Miles Killebrew was your number one special teamer last year, and the year before it was Steve Longa. So I don't think you can't keep them all, and somebody's going to have to give. And if Malik Kearney ends up showing that he can play Jack and off the ball, then it's going to make it even harder. We might be nearing the end of our Miles Killebrew era.
Experiment.
Yeah, and that's sad because he can be a good special teamer, but he's got to do more.
All right, some post-draft questions. We got to blow through these fast. Shaky 44, if you ignore the order in which the players were taken, the Lions draft looks okay, right? If they took Orwarie in the second and Tavai in the fifth, fans would have thought it was completely normal.
I 100% agree with that, because that's what the national draft boards would have said, yeah.
All right, Jimmy, he's got three questions. We'll have to fire through them quick. Did the draft help the Lions become more scheme flexible on both sides of the ball? So why? You've been talking about that throughout the whole show here. Could you help explain the plan to use Tavai, assuming he moves to the traditional New England linebacker role?
Basically, what they've done is they've added Hightower role to this defense, which they didn't have last year. And it's just a matter of, are they going to be shifting Jared Davis into that Hightower role, or will they just use Tavai? And I think it's probably Tavai.
Can you compare his playing style, Tavai, and athleticism to former New England linebackers that have played that position, how you believe it performed compared to those former and current New England linebackers?
He looks a lot like Hightower in what he does. He can cover, he can blitz, he can do a lot of different things. He becomes that scheme versatile guy.
Keith Fountain asks, do you think Jared Davis will now be able to move around with the drafting of Tavai? I foresee a rotation of linebackers coming in and out with different packages. Is that what Quinn and Patricia are after?
Yeah. I mean, real bottom line, that's it, right? And I think Tavai can rotate through all three linebacker spots. Jared Davis can rotate through three linebacker spots. And this really allows them to put four on the field at a time if they wanted to, which is not something they could do last year.
Chris Robbins has two questions. Which undrafted free agent is most likely to make the roster?
Well, Ryan Pope. The money says he's the guy. Right. Yeah.
Which draft pick is least likely to make the roster? They're going to want to want to see all the draft picks make the roster.
Sure.
Although if they get outplayed, they'll definitely get rid of one. But, yeah, which one would it be? Would it be Nauta?
P.J. Johnson, probably.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, because Atkins had a really good end of the season. The last 2 weeks of the season, Atkins played really well. And he could bump Johnson to the practice squad.
Tyler Davis and the generically named Will asked similar questions. Who is your favorite pick? Who is your least favorite pick?
My favorite pick was probably Oruwariye, right? Because that was the value there.
The value pick. You're right? Into value.
And he was a guy that I thought had he could. I think he can come in and start, and that's great from a guy you're going to get on day three. Least favorite, Austin Bryant. I wasn't a huge fan of Austin Bryant, and I get the need for it at the backup of the Jack position. I'm just not sold on him right now.
All right. That's it.
Awesome.
We've covered it all, and we're
caught up.
Yeah, we've caught up finally.
Nice.
We were playing from behind. We were very nervous. It was very stressful. You know, we had to talk about. We had our head of our quarterbacks list today, which may cause people to hate us more if they already hated us. Maybe they don't. I don't know.
Well, we have 182 reviews now, which is means there's at least 181 of those people like us.
Well, there's a few more than just one star.
But I mean, of the people who actually wrote reviews,
Sure.
All we have 181 5-star written reviews, and then one that didn't like my assessment of a player. And so, of those reviews, we've bumped up a couple, but the one written one came from Storm Gypsy, who's asked us questions in the past, and
always welcome to ask more.
And we appreciate that. He said some nice things about us and giving him a behind the scenes look on things. So appreciate that, Storm. And you know, we are going to continue to bring stuff in the off season. I know there's only 3 more weeks of like official Lions news, but we're gonna have all kinds of fun stuff going on.
All right, speaking of storms, everybody locally, stay safe out there. Make sure you have a kayak in the backyard. It seems that the weather's holding off here at the podcast studio at the moment, but maybe conditions will deteriorate later tonight. We'll find out how bad it's been in the area tomorrow. That's it.
Yeah.
You know, we're reaching spring. It's nice and warm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's going to get cold again, but it's going to turn around. We got Mother's Day on Sunday, and we roll from there.
Yeah, and we'll have some themed, you know, podcasts coming up, and we'll still take questions every week, and we'll keep trying to, you know, earn those reviews.
We need to earn more reviews.
Yeah.
We got to, you know, we would love to see some more reviews. We're very thankful for them, and we're thankful for everybody that listens.
Helps out a ton.
All right. That's it for this week. So until next time, let's go Lions.